It's a new mask mandate for the city of Jax. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, you got to mask up now, Duval. If you're indoors, we'll tell you what the new order means in this time of pandemic, and you can call us now. It's 549-2937. Then later, how the Donna Marathon is going virtual to slow the spread of COVID. But first this hour, the city of Jacksonville has reversed itself. After weeks of basically foot dragging, they've announced a mandatory mask requirement for public and indoor locations in the city of Jax and across the county, and in any other situation where you can't socially distance. Jacksonville has now joined virtually all other large Florida cities in mandating the wearing of masks. Now, Mayor Lenny Curry was not at the briefing to announce this, the first time he hasn't been at a public briefing since the pandemic began. But Nikki Kimbleton, the city's director of public affairs, made the announcement at a press conference yesterday. Let's listen.
Of course, if you're walking into a venue and you don't have a mask, you wouldn't be allowed in. That's, you know, off the top of my head, that's one of the quick and easy solutions to that. But we'll continue to work on all these plans to be closer to.
Okay, that is not Nikki Kimbleton. Let's see if we have the city's chief of staff, Jordan Ellsbury, explaining about the mask order.
Look, every single day almost, we have conversations with hospital providers and CEOs and other members of our community, and we felt that it was time to take the step.
Let's talk about the mask mandate now for Duval County. First, we're going to talk about the medical imperative, and a little bit later, we'll talk about the politics. But first, let's turn to a healthcare professional. She's Dr. Elizabeth Ransom, Chief Physician Executive at Baptist Health. Dr. Ransom, good morning.
Good morning.
So good to have you on the show. And to our callers, what are your questions about the new mask order for Duval County? The number to join us, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. Dr. Ransom, it's our understanding the city decided to go ahead and finally do a mask order for the city of Jax after they met with healthcare CEOs and doctors like yourself. It's my understanding doctors had been pressing city officials on this for some time. So what's your reaction to the order this morning?
Well, I think it's really good news. We really commend our civic leaders really for taking this responsible action, and it's a critical step in stemming the rising tide of COVID exposure in our community. So it's very important and a very critical step.
We are seeing more COVID cases around the state. Statewide, we're above 146,000 cases and nearly 3,500 deaths. There are 116 deaths so far in our area from COVID. And so for those who are still skeptical or don't understand the science behind this, can you explain why universal or near universal mask wearing is so effective in slowing the rate of transmission?
Sure. It really is important. And it's to keep everyone safe in our community, in our families, our colleagues, our coworkers, anyone that we come into contact with. Because when a mask is worn, it really helps to prevent the spread of small droplets of aerosolized particles that then can enter into the atmosphere and infect others. So it's critical for helping the spread of disease.
Now, this order went into effect countywide at 5 o'clock last night. And what that means is if you're indoors anywhere, any kind of business or building that isn't your own home, you need to be masked up. That also includes public places where you can't socially distance. And this is for anyone over the age of 6, Dr. Ransom. This is comparable to orders we've seen in other Florida cities. As you look at the numbers around Florida where we are spiking upward again, what are your concerns about how the state is managing this? Because certainly state officials are trying to drive the curve back down.
Sure, absolutely. It's certainly a very worrisome trend that we're seeing across the state and frankly here in our local community as well. So masking, number one, that was a critical step, as I said, and we commend our leadership for moving in that direction, because it's so important for spreading disease, frankly. But there are other steps that we can all take as well. And it sounds simple, but it truly is important. Hand washing frequently and as with soap and water is important. Carry some hand sanitizer around and use that frequently. Try not to touch exposed surfaces if at all possible. And really, physical distancing is important too, 6 feet. And again, there are some situations where you might not be physically distanced, but that's where the mask comes into play, and it really is important. So, you know, we're all in this together, and we can all play a part. And when everyone is taking these precautions, we really hope that can help start to stem the tide of what we're currently seeing.
And there are certainly COVID patients being treated at Baptist Health. For people who don't take this disease seriously, they think it's just like the flu, what would you say to them?
Well, it's not just like the flu, unfortunately, because for the flu, we have vaccines. We do not have a vaccine yet for the coronavirus or COVID-19. And it can be, as we know, it can be very, very deadly, particularly for our most vulnerable populations, those who have chronic disease, the elderly, and so forth. But that being said, younger people are affected too, and that's certainly the trend that we're seeing now, is that there's a larger proportion of younger individuals who are getting sick, have the virus, are hospitalized, perhaps not experiencing the devastating consequences that those with chronic disease and the elderly do. But still, it's not something to be taken lightly at all.
Thank you so much for that. She's Dr. Elizabeth Ransom, Chief Physician Executive at Baptist Health. Doctor, thanks for your insights this morning.
Oh, thank you so much. My pleasure.
Now, the medical imperative is obvious, but in this city, Jacksonville, which is preparing to host the Republican National Convention in a couple of months, the politics of this are also significant and quite fascinating to discuss as well. Daniel Henry chairs the Duval Democrats, and he's on the line. Daniel, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
Good, thanks. And it's 549-2937 to join us. Your organization called for the mayor to issue this mask order a little while back. Your reaction to the announcement?
Yeah, so we issued a release on Friday asking for the mayor to issue a mask order. We were one of the last metropolitan counties across the state outside of Orange County, Hillsborough, Broward, Miami-Dade, and Palm Beach that still hadn't issued some form of mask order. And with such spikes in COVID-19 cases that we were seeing in Duval County, it only made sense from a health perspective and from a good health policy perspective for the mayor to issue the mask order. So we were glad to see it issued on Monday. We wished it was him that issued the order. In person.
And what about that? There's been a lot of discussion about that. It was even noted in the New York Times that the mayor was not present to announce this. He said he had a family commitment, though.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll find out what that family commitment was in the future. But I think it goes a long way, particularly when you're announcing such a deviation from a policy that you've had in the past, to encouraging people to wear masks in the future for health reasons. It's important for him to be able to say that to the public. People take it a lot more seriously when the mayor tells them to do something compared to the communications director. They still did an okay job in announcing the mask order. Wish there was more guidance for businesses. I think the fact that the city was responding to people via Twitter up until late yesterday afternoon before we actually saw the order was pretty telling us the rollout of it. It could have been better, but I'm glad the order was issued.
Now, the city of Jack says they decided to issue the mask order after realizing military installations in this area have one, and also conversations with healthcare CEOs and physicians. A group of physicians had sent a letter to the mayor, or they made it public. They actually sent it to the media first, basically asking him to mandate a mask order and also asking him to downscale the Republican National Convention slated for Vistar Arena in late August. They had said that they were going to descend on City Hall this week wearing white coats and masks, TV cameras in tow, and hand-delivering him this letter asking him to do this. Political observers might take from that that perhaps City Hall didn't want those optics on the local and national news. They might see that the mayor's staff were choosing to insulate him from being on video, reversing himself from a mask order because he's trying to thread a tough political needle right now, Daniel, as he responds to this clear public health imperative that he's got to manage as the city's mayor, while at the same time staying on the right side of the Trump White House, which has shown hostility to masks and social distancing. At the recent rally for the president in Oklahoma, the venue there put social distancing stickers on seats at the venue, and the Trump administration, according to the Washington Post, took them off. They wanted people packed in. So how how is the mayor going to square this? The question I think everyone has is, will the mask mandate still be in effect when the Republican convention comes to town in August? That's 2 months out, and a lot can happen between now and then. But that's the question I think anyone looking at the politics of this has today.
Yeah, I think that was a great kind of analysis as to what's going on right now, Melissa. And you're absolutely right. We don't know whether or not this mask order is going to be in effect in 2 months. We hope it will be, because the CDC has already said that they expect a large influx of COVID-19 cases in the fall. And that is right in the season for that to occur. We don't know whether or not the Trump campaign is going to, and the RNC, in fact, is going to honor sort of the social distancing requirements that will be occurring in Duval. They've said as such yesterday, but time will tell whether or not they will live up to that. I think a lot of times the president has a huge impact as to whether or not his campaign and the Republican committee ends up doing what they said that they're going to do. But ultimately, I think this is something that the community has made their voice aware of. I think a lot of people have been speaking about the fact that our city should be more innovative and more forceful in some of the ways that we can try to tamp down the cases of COVID-19. Those amazing 200 doctors that have been essential workers for the past months, keeping all of our community members safe at the risk of their own families, really have a point to make when they're talking about some of the things our city needs to do to keep people safe. The fact that we're bringing 50,000 people to Jacksonville up until yesterday with no real precautions as to how we're going to keep people safe, in their words, is irresponsible, and I agree with those notions. So I think if we want to continue the momentum that we're seeing right now, people continue need to lift their voices on these particular issues, because that's the only way, I think, in my opinion, the administration can be moved on some of these important issues. Because you're right, there will be pressures from the political side, particularly from the White House and from the RNC, to be as lax as possible on some of the COVID-19 social distancing requirements that the CDC has asked for. We know that's going to happen. So the only way we can ensure that doesn't happen is if community members, if citizens, if residents continue to make their voices heard, continue to call the mayor's office, I'll call city council, and continue to push and advocate for these issues, because that's the only way, at least we've seen so far, that will actually happen.
What are your thoughts on the new mask order for Jacksonville, everybody? Give us a call. And by the way, if you're in another county, we'll want to hear from you too. St. Augustine now has a mask order. There's a county meeting in St. John's this morning. Some groups may be pressing this at that event. As we talk about this, it's 549-2937 to join us. Give us a call. Tracy, a physician in Mandarin. Hi, Tracy. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, my daughter also is a physician, here in town has been making masks at Baptist Hospital, Jack's for masks. And what I see is many restaurants, you go there, they are packed. And I ask the owner, how come people walking in no mask, they say, oh, it's illegal to wear masks. We can't tell them. I think we need to act like New York for next month, maybe 2 months. Go like what New York did. We need to stop this. Five physicians here, good friends, they have died because of this virus. Can't visit their family. We need to become straight, and we need to make surprise visit to a lot of places and find them. Find them. I think that's the way to stop it. It's sad, and we need to, we don't want to become another New York, really. Thank you so much.
Thanks for that, Tracy. You know, New York, especially New York City, Daniel, is so incredibly dense that just the way everybody's packed in there had a lot to do with the spread in Manhattan, certainly. One blessing we have here in Jacksonville is we're pretty spread out, and that has played at least some role in our lower rates, although they are going up lately. By the way, I want to let everyone know that there are lots of places where you can find masks. You can get them cloth masks at everywhere from the Bobby K Boutique to Rethreaded to Home Depot, Costco, Amazon, Etsy, Target has them, I saw. And if you go to wjct.org/radio, you can buy a WJCT branded mask. Give us a call as we talk about this with Danielle Henry, chair of the Duval County Dems. What do you think about the mask order for Duval County? Lots of tweets coming into the show. Philip tweets us and says, the governor and the mayor have politicized the mask mandate. It's all about getting and keeping the RNC convention. Nevertheless, for the good of public health, Jacksonville needs mandated mask wearing given the exponential rise in COVID cases. You know, Daniel, we do need to point out that Lenny Curry, from the outset, really encouraged the wearing of masks. He modeled it. He publicly put on a mask so people could see him in the mask. He encouraged social distancing. He was early and proactive in setting up testing sites around town, although certain African-American politicians representing this city, both at the local and state level, have pressed him to set up more in underserved communities. And so, you know, we need to give the mayor credit for his leadership as the pandemic took hold. As his counterpart, or some, not his counterpart, but someone who opposes him politically, what about that?
I think that's a great question. We did take some good steps in the beginning to try to slow the spread of COVID-19. Jacksonville was one of the first cities, I will admit, that was willing to kind of put in stay-at-home orders to try to keep people at home and stop the spread of COVID-19. But I think one thing is really important is to not only give compliments to when we do things right, but also speak out when I think we're not going fast enough or we're not doing enough to keep that momentum going. We had a strong start when it came to the response for COVID-19, but I think we need to continue that strong finish. COVID-19 is not going away. I think we did make some mistakes in terms of the way that we kind of started to reopen the city again. I was right when we were seeing a lot of the outbreaks happen at the beaches. I was in Atlantic Beach with some friends, and you would have thought as if nothing, COVID-19 had never happened. No one was wearing masks. No one was social distancing. It was a pretty normal Saturday afternoon. And I don't fault people for doing that. I think a lot of times elected officials and leaders should not only speak about how we can keep ourselves safe, but sometimes they have to make it enforceable in order for us to really pay attention to it. I don't think the stay-at-home order would have, I don't think people would have stayed at home as often or as in great numbers as we want them to if a stay-at-home order was issued. I don't think that people would have stayed home from work if there weren't government assistance programs that were providing paycheck protection or unemployment checks if they could actually get them. So there are things that we need to do in order for us to encourage people to actually act. These face mask orders that we've seen all across the state have been effective in terms of trying to bring down numbers and create more social distancing. And to kind of go to a point that the previous caller was making, what you were making earlier, New York, you're right, is a lot more urban, it's a lot more dense than Duval County, but I think it speaks to the recovery story of their ability to now be at a point where they have less COVID-19 cases than Florida and Duval County does. I think we should be taking lessons from all across the country as to how communities are dealing with COVID-19. There are ways that we can continue to improve to ensure that the spikes in cases don't continue to occur. And I think it's also responsible for our government to give more notice for businesses to be able to properly recover. The fact that a lot of businesses found out via Twitter or a press conference that the alcohol sales were going to be put down, or the fact that there was a mask order that was suddenly kind of thrust upon them without any kind of explanations as to whether or not it applied to a certain age frame, if there's a certain size for the business. These are all things that people need to know well in advance, you know, and provided with enough information for them to do the right thing, because that's ultimately what we want people to do, to be socially aware, socially responsible, and to do the best that they can to keep not even themselves safe, but their community safe. But I think our government, particularly our local government and the mayor, has a responsibility to not only keep us safe, but provide us the resources and the infrastructure and the structure for it to properly and actually happen.
Here's a tweet from JR. Finally, the results have been immediate. The Oak Leaf target was around 85% masked up, whereas a couple of days before, it seemed like it was only 40%, he says. Tom emails the show, I wonder if the mask mandate will last through the RNC. My cynical side says the requirement will be deemed unnecessary right around August 20th. Tell me I'm jaded. We'll have to see, Tom. I mean, we could be seeing a real flattening of the curve by then. It's just hard to know. Rhoda on our Facebook page, I think there should be a fine attached to this mandate. What's the point of one with no penalties? To be clear, you will receive a warning, not an immediate fine, if you're in a public place with no mask, and there will not be universal enforcement. That said, mandating it does get more people to do it, which overall drives down the curve and overall saves lives. And so that's where we are, Duval. 549-2937, Dave in Arlington. Hello, Dave.
Morning, Melissa. Daniel's being very nice to the Republican leadership in this community and the state and this country. You know, if you can make a charge that there's almost criminal negligence at the highest level of the Republican leadership by their refusal back in January, February, to recognize that this aerosol transmission was real. And rather than mocking the virus as a Democratic hoax and ignoring science, in fact, action could have been and should have been taken back in January, February to really put some teeth into these preventative measures. And President Trump did not do that. His cabinet did not do that. Governor DeSantis did not do that. The only politician in Florida who stood up was Nikki Freed, and she was mocked and ignored by Governor DeSantis. So I'm sorry, there is political negligence going on here with the Republican Party, and it's totally consistent with their rejection of science in general, whether it's climate change, environmental regulations that are inconsistent with their political philosophy. They choose the course of follow the money, follow the perceived political power to reject the advice of experts as a bunch of elitists, as a bunch of radical leftists who want to take over the government and or have the government take over your personal life. I mean, it is irresponsible what the way the Republicans have responded to this pandemic. And now we're paying the consequences. So I hope folks remember that in November.
Dave, thanks for the call. There are two things going on here. One, states, particularly in the Southeast, that have had looser restrictions in this pandemic have seen cases going back up. That said, blue states like California, which have had really tough restrictions, they've also struggled with this virus. I just want to make that clear. But all of that said, Daniel, you know, this whole debate shouldn't be a political one. Wearing a mask should not be political, yet it is.
Right.
What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, so I agree with you 100%. Wearing masks should not be political. I think it's unfortunate that some elected officials, and I think most of the audience knows who we're talking about, the White House, has not particularly been very helpful when we're kind of talking about the message of social distancing and wearing a mask. That being said, I think that's important for us at the local level to ensure that we're doing the right thing and that we're encouraging people to wear masks and to socially distance and do everything that they can to try to keep not only themselves but their families safe. Wearing masks should not be political. It's not a political statement. It's a way for you to keep not only yourself safe but essential workers safe, to keeping small business owners and workers that are trying to put food on the table and to survive the economic recession that we're going on safe. It shouldn't be a political issue. We can always address the way that our government did not appropriately respond to COVID-19. I have a long list of them, and I've been saying it over the course of the last 6 months. But I think right now in this particular moment, the only way that we can ensure that our political leaders, particularly the ones local, are held accountable is that we continue to push our voices on all of these issues and encourage them to do everything that they can to ensure that they have policies and procedures that are in place in order for us to keep safe.
Now, you you are the chair of the Duval Democrats, and as the New York Times and other national media outlets have noted, the president coming to Duval County to accept his party's nomination for four more years is no accident. This is a purple county. It went for Andrew Gillum in 2018 when he narrowly lost the gubernatorial race to Governor Ron DeSantis. There is a lot of attention being focused on your efforts to try to turn Duval County blue in November. And so what's your strategy for that? And how do you respond to critics who say that not only the local party, the local Democratic Party, but the state party is poorly organized and not capitalizing on these political headwinds that are buffeting the Republicans right now?
Yeah, I think we are putting in the infrastructure that we need in order for us to be successful. The state party had field organizers on the ground since September, five or six of them that have been doing voter registration, that have been signing up people for vote by mail, that have been engaging people to ensure that they not only are aware of the upcoming elections, but that they actually turn out. We have candidates in every single race that will be on the ballot in August and November, and we're encouraging everyone to vote for them. Obviously, I can
Let me just jump in. That's the first time that's happened in Florida in some time. Is that right? On all of the state representative races, state Senate races, et cetera, where the Democrats are challenging the Republicans on every race. Is this when was the last time that happened?
Yeah, it's one of the first times that's happened statewide. Locally, we were able to achieve that in 2018. We were able to do it again in 2020. I think I firmly believe that incumbents shouldn't kind of get a walk by just paying a check and qualifying in June. So I think it's important for them to have candidates. So everyone from Josh Hicks, who's challenging Coy Byrd, Ben Marcus, who's challenging Jason Fisher, and all the other candidates that are on the ballot. Jimmy Majette, who's running for clerk of court, or Donna Deegan, who is running for Congress again against Rutherford, or Nicole Hamm, who is in a special election for a city council race. These are all important candidates that we need to uplift and advocate for. That's what we're doing to try to make sure that they get over the finish line. We now have a 20,000 voter advantage in terms of actual voters compared to the Republicans. We have a 10,000 voter advantage when it comes to vote by mail. We're doing everything that we can to ensure that the turnout is there for us to be able to be successful not only in the primary election, but the November election. If people want to get involved and help us volunteer, they can go to DuvalDems.org/events. Even with COVID-19 and social distancing, we're making calls literally every single day to voters to encourage them to not only sign up for vote by mail, because I think that's important with what we're seeing right now with COVID-19, but also get them to the polls.
And to be clear, the local Republican Party is also encouraging vote by mail, and certainly older people in particular of both parties are interested in voting by mail this November, if we still have a active spread of the virus then, which we likely will. And I want to take one more call as we talk about the new mask order for Jacksonville. It's Mary in Mandarin. Mary. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I've been a big mask proponent for a long time, and I'm glad to see that it finally came, although I think it's a bit late. And any parent or teacher or anybody who's been a coach or anything of children would know that you can't just say, you should do this, we should do this, we need to do this, it's the right thing to do, sometimes with some children or some people. And it's been frustrating, and I think that it was long overdue. But also, I wanted to say something to the people who feel that they shouldn't have to or that it's their right not to, that over the years we've had seatbelt laws, you can't drink and drive, you can't smoke in public places, and all of these things over time became as it should be, and you just have to do it. And this is, I believe, something right along those lines as well. And that's all I had to say, and thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Mary, and certainly that's what the mayor is saying and what doctors are saying, and it's what we're modeling here at WJCT, by the way. We have been wearing masks in the building for weeks now at the direction of our CEO, David McGowan. Anyone who comes into this building has had to wear a mask for some time. And that extends now to everybody. If you're just waking up to this, there's a mask order for Jacksonville, all of Duval County. I believe Baldwin is exempt and the beaches communities, but most other places, if you're indoors, put on a mask. And I want to thank you, Daniel Henry, chair of the Duval Dems. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it, Melissa.
And earlier, we welcomed Dr. Elizabeth Ransom with Baptist Health. And much more still ahead on the show later. The Donna Marathon goes virtual, what that means for all those marathon runners. But up next.
About 40% of all cancer could be prevented using lifestyle measures or health-related choices.
Getting healthy in this time of pandemic, it'll help you ward off COVID, but also prevent cancer too. Another physician joins us with her new published article in a peer-reviewed journal. Stay with us.
On Fresh Air, you can hear interviews that make you see the world in a new way.
Every drink of water you take, every pot of coffee you make is dinosaur pee because it's all been through the kidneys of a Tyrannosaurus rex or an Apatosaurus many, many times because all the water we have is all the water we have ever had.
You just never know what you'll learn next on Fresh Air. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Dig, research, question, repeat. That's what we do every week on Reveal.
I have here thousands of pages of documentation of murder.
I'm Al Ledson, host of Reveal, the weekly radio show from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. Reveal, because there's always more to the story.
Saturday at 3 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Welcome back. Well, common sense lifestyle choices like a plant-based diet, limiting alcohol, getting some regular exercise, they really do make a difference in warding off cancer, even more than previously thought. Diane Johnson, MD, is Director of Breast Imaging at Memorial Hospital in Jacksonville. She just published an article in the American Journal of Lifestyle Medicine showing the major role lifestyle plays in cancer prevention. Let's listen. Dr. Johnson, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You just published an article in the American Journal of Lifestyle Medicine looking at the role that lifestyle plays in the prevention of breast cancer. And this is something we've heard a lot about through the years, but you think nearly half of breast cancer cases could be prevented through our lifestyle choices, correct?
Well, it's actually about 40% of all cancers that could be prevented using lifestyle measures or health-related choices. And this is really powerful. It's something that I think a lot of people don't realize, that there is this tool that we all have, and that's the choices we make every day.
So what are the basic health choices that, we can never repeat this enough, that we all need to be making so as to reduce our chance of getting any kind of cancer?
So really what we recommend follows the American Institute for Cancer Research, or AICR, recommendations, and they came out with 10 cancer prevention recommendations that we can all follow. And the important thing is not to be perfect, but to incorporate as many of these recommendations as we can, as often as we can. And so their recommendations are: be a healthy weight, so maintain a normal body mass index, be physically active, and I do like to point out that even though there are exercise guidelines, so for example, 150 minutes a week of moderate intensity exercise, the non-exercise activity is equally important. So park far away when you get to work. Take the stairs instead of the elevator. Stand up while you're working when you can. Basically, avoiding prolonged periods of sitting. All those things come into play. And then continuing on with the list, they recommend eating a diet that's rich in whole grains, vegetables, fruits, and beans. So the majority of what we eat should be fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and legumes or beans, with meat and dairy providing little, if any, contribution to our daily diet.
More of a Mediterranean diet then.
Exactly. Focusing really on those whole grains, vegetables, and fruits and beans. And if we fill two-thirds of our plate with those things, quite frankly, you're so full, you end up not eating the other things that you shouldn't be eating, which include fast foods, processed foods, foods that are high in fat or added sugars. They also recommend that you limit red and processed meats, limit sugar-sweetened beverages, limit or eliminate alcohol. And this is one that a lot of people don't realize. There's really no safe intake of alcohol with regards to breast cancer. So as much as possible, we recommend patients that are concerned about breast cancer risk to limit or completely eliminate alcohol. They also don't specifically recommend any supplements for preventing cancer. Now, we all know that, your doctor may provide supplements for various reasons, but cancer prevention is not one of them. They recommend breastfeeding if you can. And importantly, if you've already had a cancer diagnosis or if you are diagnosed with cancer, follow these recommendations if you can. There was actually a study of over 30,000 people, and they looked at breast cancer incidence and how many of these choices that patients adopted, so how many of these guidelines they adopted. And they found that if women adopted five or more of these recommendations on a regular basis, there was a 60% decrease in breast cancer incidence when compared with people who did not. So that's a huge difference.
Yeah, that's statistically significant.
So, yes, absolutely.
So this is all advice we've been hearing for many years. Why do you think it's so hard for people to actually take the recommendations and make these lifestyle changes?
Yes, I think that it's multifactorial, meaning there are a lot of different reasons that contribute. I think first and foremost, patients get confused or people get confused by all of the different dietary recommendations and the newest fad diet, whatever it is, whether it's low carb, high carb, low fat, high fat, whatever it is. They get confused because they're constantly bombarded with sometimes conflicting information. But if you really look at all of the different fads and dietary recommendations, there are certain things that the vast majority of them agree on. And that is, if you focus your diet on vegetables, fruits, whole grains, you really are eating an optimal diet. And so I also think people get overwhelmed with feeling like it has to be all or nothing. And that's one message I would like to get across, is that it really isn't all or nothing. Now, of course, the more closely you follow recommendations, the more healthfully you eat, the better results you're going to have. But it's, any change can be helpful. Any amount of physical activity above baseline is helpful. So anything that people can do or incorporate can reduce cancer risk and, importantly, improve overall health. So we know now that most of our breast cancer patients, because our treatments are so good and our early detection programs are so good, are not going to die of breast cancer. They're going to die of what all of us are going to die of, coronary artery disease, complications from diabetes and hypertension, stroke, peripheral vascular disease, all of these things. And by following these recommendations, including a diet rich in whole grains, fruits, vegetables, and beans, and engaging in physical activity and avoiding all of these other things that I mentioned before, you can dramatically reduce your risk or even reverse certain chronic diseases like coronary artery disease, hypertension, and diabetes.
Well, I want to thank you for your expertise, and check out Dr. Johnson's latest article in the American Journal of Lifestyle Medicine. As it's all advice everyone needs to be taking for better health and prevention of cancer. Dr. Diane Johnson, she is Director of Breast Imaging at Memorial Hospital in Jacksonville. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And by the way, those lifestyle choices will really build your immune system too and ward off coronavirus, or at least help a little. I want to make a quick plug for our What's Good Wednesdays. If you go to WJCT.org, sign up for our free e-newsletter, What's Good Wednesdays, that we blast out every Wednesday afternoon. A look at all of the positive things happening in this community to help each other through recession and pandemic and all of the challenges that we are experiencing right now. There are so many great organizations and great people doing good things across the First Coast, and we want to spotlight them where we can. So sign up for our What's Good Wednesday newsletter, and we'll give a few shout-outs tomorrow on Wednesday right here on this show. A quick break, and in a moment, like so many other things, the Donna Marathon is going virtual in this time of COVID. How was that going to work for runners? We will find out after this. Keep listening. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and we'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, why medical errors are so common and how some medical innovations, like electronic patient records, can make errors more likely. We'll talk with Dr. Danielle Ofri, author of When We Cause Harm. She's treated patients for 2 decades at New York's Bellevue Hospital, including many COVID-19 patients. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Tourism has been decimated by coronavirus closures, and the impact's been especially hard felt in areas that rely on seasonal dollars, like the Berkshires in western Massachusetts.
Who would have ever thought it would be a pandemic that would come along and really deal the main part of our economy this crushing blow?
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Tourist economy shut down this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Marco Werman. At The World, we're always looking beyond our borders to get the global take on the news. That's especially important as we deal with a pandemic. We take you to places where the coronavirus struck first, places that may recover from its effects before the U.S. Join us as we take on each day's news from a global perspective. That's why we call it The World. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Police are often the first to respond to a mental health crisis. Many officers say they shouldn't be.
After 2 years on the job, I recognize that police should not be responding to those that are in mental health crisis.
A push is now on to shift responsibility away from law enforcement and make better use of trained professionals. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. A look at those changes next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
It's the marathon to finish breast cancer. The Donna Foundation announces this week that the Donna Marathon Weekend and all the events around it are going to be presented in a virtual format through the spring of 2021. This is, of course, due to the COVID pandemic. How's this going to work? Well, we're going to find out now from Amanda Napolitano, Executive Director of the Donna Foundation. Good morning, Amanda.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. And let's begin by noting that registration opens July 1st for all Donna events. That includes the Players Donna 5K and the Marathon Weekend, which is set for next February. Mm-hmm. But because of the pandemic, you're making some changes. How is this going to change the Donna Weekend?
Well, our focus is to deliver that great Donna experience to the front doors of everyone everywhere. We've launched our campaign Everywhere Together, and it just means that we're going to launch an virtual platform that will be centralized on our Active Experience app, and runners will be able to launch these technologies and hear in-run messaging from us, cheers from their friends and loved ones. We'll have tribute walls where people can run for people they love and friends and family. We'll do opening and closing ceremonies, virtual event bags with all kinds of offers from our sponsors and partners. So really our focus was, to focus on the ways that we can deliver this in a virtual way so that we can focus on serving the families that need us more than ever right now, Melissa.
Right. The Donna events do raise money for women living with breast cancer that need financial assistance. And in this time of coronavirus, that can be an even more urgent matter. So, but what I hear you saying, Amanda, is that you're still encouraging people to get out and run, but they're just not going to be able to run together.
Exactly. You know, as we looked at this, Melissa, really we had to take the patients in mind, right? They are our priority. And, you know, we're seeing a tremendous volume into our Donna Care line right now, and about one in five families that call us are seeing specific impacts from COVID. And so, you know, in terms of investing in a really large marathon event that may or may not be able to happen, that people would feel, you know, they may or may not feel comfortable in coming to run with us in person. We wanted to make sure that we're protecting the fiduciary health of our organization so that we can continue to serve these patients. And not only that, as we looked at the various guidelines of, okay, if we were able to orchestrate this in a socially distanced way, at the end of the day, we would have to encourage anyone that has an immune, you know, deficiency that they would have to stay home. And that means the very people were there to celebrate. So really, this was the right decision for our organization so that we can continue to do what we do, right? We lift fear away from breast cancer patients and their families and replace it with a lot of love. So, now, yes.
Okay. And the big event, the big Donna Marathon is set for Valentine's Day weekend, February 2021.
Correct.
That's months away, half a year or more away. you still feel that the pandemic will be active enough that you could not plan a physical event in February of 2021?
Well, a lot of those decisions, Melissa, have to be made now in terms of investing in venues, making deposits. You know, really, you would almost have to guarantee me today that we would be in a you know, perfect scenario come February, you know, for this to work. So, you know, I really do hope we're in an amazing place in February. I truly do. But unfortunately, for organizations like ours, you sort of have to know those things today.
How do you anticipate this affecting your fundraising? And what kind of feedback are you getting from people who had planned to journey here to Jacksonville to run in the marathon?
Well, I think this really opens up a lot of opportunity for people to participate in a Donna event, regardless of where you are, right? You know, you don't have to get on an airplane and come to Jacksonville to run Donna. You know, I think overwhelmingly we're getting a lot of support, a lot of gratitude for making the decisions early, understanding where we're coming from with all of this. And, you know, runners tend to support the causes they love. It really is how we've always supported families living with breast cancer, putting one foot in front of the other. So I feel very confident that people will continue to support the organization and run in this new and exciting way. And then we'll focus on delivering the best 15th anniversary you've ever seen in February of 2022.
We do need to disclose that, of course, the marathon is named after and created by Donna Deegan, who is a candidate for Congress right now. But we're talking about this event, not politics. How can people register, Amanda, to be part of the Donna Weekend and the other events you have planned?
Sure. Breastcancermarathon.com, and registration opens tomorrow, July 1st at noon. We are launching our entire series for the year, which will kick off with the Players Donna 5K in October, Donna Marathon Weekend, of course, in February. And then we have a new concept of an event that will be rolled out Mother's Day weekend of 2021 called Mother's Day Your Way. And, you know, I loved your guest, Dr. Johnson, you know, indicating that exercise is so important to our health. With Mother's Day Your Way, it's whatever it is that you choose to do as an athlete. Stand-up paddle, surfing, running, cycling, swimming, you know, whatever it is that you like to do, you will do with Mother's Day Your Way and earn a great medal and support the Donna Foundation all at the same time.
Again, it's breastcancermarathon.com, and she's Amanda Napolitano, Executive Director of the Donna Foundation. Thanks, Amanda.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And that's our show. Thanks so much for listening. We'll rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock, or you can catch our podcast online at our website or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. We'll connect with you again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day, and remember, Duval, masks are now mandatory. Put them on.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.